You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
It's the first day of summer. It's the last day of our podcast for a little while this summer. We'll explain, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
So this show, when we started last August, didn't really know what it was going to be like, but I think what it has evolved into is a show that is reactionary, previews, reactions. And during the summertime, we're going into the dog days now, there's not a lot to react to. And so what we're going to do after today's show is we're going to put the show on a little bit of a hiatus for a little while. We might do some shows this summer to react to big news that might happen. For instance, the Major League Baseball draft is coming up in a few weeks, or SEC football media days. Maybe we react to what Sam Pittman says there. But there's no games for a little bit. And so we don't want to be the type that's having hot takes and debates and those types of things.
You don't fancy yourself a Stephen A?
Sports talk radio, a lot of times here in the summer, it evolves into playing Arkansas State, or should the Razorbacks wear black jerseys, or should they play at War Memorial Stadium? And trust me, we're going to be able to debate playing Arkansas State and playing at War Memorial Stadium in the same week.
Playing Arkansas State at War Memorial Stadium
in a few months. So that just a little programming note there. That's what we're doing. We're not going away for good. We're just going away for on a daily basis for the next undetermined number of weeks. We'll be back at some point during the football preseason. I'm with Anthony Christensen here today. We'll look back a little bit at Razorback baseball a little bit later. I just got back from Omaha last night. Long drive, chance to kind of collect thoughts, and we'll get there. But first, Anthony, you've got a story on our site this morning. John Calipari spoke at Crystal Bridges yesterday, and he, as he has been doing wherever he speaks publicly, whether it be the father-daughter camp or wherever he is, he's been dropping little breadcrumbs about the schedule,
little sprinkles. Yeah.
And so yesterday at Crystal Bridges, he said they are going to play at Michigan State this upcoming year, going to be the start of a home and home series, and they're going to play Texas Tech at American Airlines Center in Dallas. It'll actually be the second time that Arkansas has played Texas Tech at American Airlines Center, when I can't remember if Bob Knight was still the coach there or not, but it was right there in that era. They played them down there. Stan Heath was Arkansas's coach. I remember Sean McCurdy hitting like a 57-foot shot at the halftime buzzer, and Arkansas ends up winning that game. But they're going to play Texas Tech, who eliminated them last year. Mm-hmm. Michigan State was obviously a really good team this last season. And you combine that with the other games that we know about, Duke and Chicago on Thanksgiving, Houston at the Barclays Center right before Christmas. We know that Baylor is going to come here for the return game from that one that they played last year in Dallas. Louisville's going to come here for the SEC-ACC Challenge. I can't tell you the number of years when different coaches were here and people clamored for this type of schedule, mm-hmm. and they never could get them. This is a big-time schedule. It's something that is going to excite the fan base going into basketball season. But the other thing that it tells me, too, is that John Calipari, as I'm sure he is every year, is highly confident in this team to be able to play this type of schedule. You're never going to go undefeated against it, but be able to handle yourself well enough that it's not going to dock you when you get to NCAA tournament selection time.
Yeah. And Louisville coming here and all, it's a great schedule. It's going to be fun to cover, I'll tell you that much. Yeah. I'm excited to watch all these games. But no, I think you're exactly right in saying that he's confident in the team. I don't think you would build a schedule like this if you didn't think you had a team that could compete against this level of competition. They're going to play against every team that made it to the Elite Eight last season, which is pretty exciting when you also account for SEC play. So, I mean, it's a great schedule. It's got a lot of fun trips. You know, I've been to Breslin Center up there in East Lansing back when I covered Southern Indiana and
Evansville.
The Izzone, yeah. It's a great venue to catch a game. It was a lot of fun. So if you can, make the trip. But no, it's a great schedule. It's going to have them prepared for SEC play. You can say that for sure. And you know, it's certainly you're not going to get docked unless you're just going out and getting blown out every game, which I wouldn't think would happen.
You know, with Calipari, he said last year, hey, I want to go back to New York. They're going back to New York. Hey, I want to go back to Dallas. They're going back to Dallas. So, you know, I want to play on Thanksgiving again. They're playing on Thanksgiving again. But, man, you look at his home schedule. You get Baylor and Louisville, and who knows, maybe there's another, you know, maybe there's something else out there that we don't know about yet. Mm-hmm. And you add that to what the SEC announced earlier this week, the opponents for conference games. Arkansas at home next year, they're going to have Baylor and Louisville for sure from out of conference. Then they're going to play Auburn. They're going to play Kentucky here. They're going to play Tennessee here. They're going to play Texas here, which that's always going to move the needle. Mm-hmm. You know, A&M, we'll see what kind of team they've got, but that's always a game that seems to get people fired up. And then LSU, Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt at home. That is a hell of a home schedule.
It is. It's a lot of fun, a lot of tournament teams in that group there as well.
It's the kind of schedule you want to have when you're asking everybody to totally redo how they've done seats for all these years.
Yeah. Yes, no, for sure. But you know, it's a great home schedule. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm intrigued to see who they get for the opener. I would imagine they're probably not gonna open against Baylor on November 4th or whatever.
I think the 3rd is the first day they can play.
November 3rd. So I can't imagine it's gonna be Baylor or somebody huge for the first game. But I would imagine they're probably looking for, you know, those teams that are like Lipscomb level that are going to be tournament teams.
What if it was Baylor on November 3rd?
It would be a lot of
fun. Like, what if they just came out of the gate yeah. and said, we're going to play Baylor first?
And I mean, hey, Scott cool. Drew is he's not one to back away from challenge.
I wish college basketball had more of these marquee games mm-hmm. on that first night. Like, make it a big deal. You know, and I get that people look forward to being able to see their team play, but like, what happens a lot of times is that early season basketball, it gets overshadowed by the fact that you got football going on at the mm-hmm. same time. And I feel like if you could make some of, like on that Monday night, and I know you got Monday night football to deal with at that time of year, but on Monday night, just make it this big blowout thing for people who love college basketball and they don't care about the NFL.
That's me.
Where it is you. But you know, like where they can have this big, you know, kind of celebratory night for college basketball. It mm-hmm. used to be that way, I feel like, when I was younger, but the basketball season used to always not start until more like Thanksgiving time. Mm-hmm. And so as they've, you know, continually kind of inched it up a little bit more, I feel like you see fewer of those marquee matchups on that opening night.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're maybe starting to see it creep back into that a little bit. I mean, last year you had Baylor playing in Gonzaga in opening night, which was a lot of fun on paper, but then in practice, Gonzaga won, I think, by 40, if I remember correctly. But I mean, that's a marquee matchup that got people excited. I mean, there's a lot of fun non-conference games that are going to be really good, even beyond the Arkansas schedule. I'm not going to go into, you know, all of the really fun non-conference games that are coming up. But you know, I think they're starting to creep back into that. I mean, you're seeing fewer, not that there's not going to be those out there, but you're seeing fewer power conference teams having, you know, Maryland Eastern Shore followed by NC Central, followed by Lemoyne, followed by, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to those teams, but those are teams that you expect to kind of walk over if you're a team in a power conference. So I like schedules like this. I think it's great that teams are filling out their schedules with, you know, high level competition. And my only gripe is that I would like to see some more teams play against the really high level mid-major teams like the Drakes, the St. Louis's and teams like that. But, you know, one step at a time, I guess.
Can I take back everything I just said? The Cowboys play Monday Night Football on that first night of college basketball season. So
you can take it back for you. I will not be watching.
Take it back for me. I think there's a pretty good chance the men might be playing that night. I don't know for sure. But the women, we reported earlier this week, they're going to play Louisiana Tech on the 4th, which to me, that tells me that they're probably going to have Bud Walton Arena used on the third.
Yeah, for the men's game. It was the reverse last year, right?
Yes.
It was the women's team opened with Fairfield. Unfortunately, I couldn't go because it was a tornado. And then the next night was the men's team playing against Lipscomb. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. In fact, I would probably say it's likely.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll see. But anyway, so there's what the men's basketball schedule looks like right now. Again, Duke, Louisville, Baylor, Houston, Michigan State, and Texas Tech.
And Louisville.
I said Louisville.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Were all six of those teams in the tournament last year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I thought so. I didn't know if there was like a surprise. Where Louisville, for instance, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to them last year.
Louisville beat or lost to Creighton in the first round.
Oh, yeah, the bird matchup.
Yeah, and an 8-9 matchup, which was a crazy 8-9.
The Bluebirds and the Redbirds. I remember this now. That was like one of the first games of the tournament. Maybe the first game of the tournament.
I don't know if it was the first. It was definitely one of the first games. I called it correctly. I did say Creighton was going to win that game, mind you. I did not have a good bracket, but I did get that one correct.
You know, we just spent a lot of time in Omaha, and I'm up there, you know, every time the baseball team goes. The arena that Creighton plays in is directly across the street from the baseball stadium. I think it's the CHI Health Center now. Yep. It used to be called the Quest Center, I believe. Every time that I'm sitting there in the press box, because you're looking out of the press box and you're looking directly at that, I cannot help but marvel how beautiful of a facility that is. It's part of a larger convention center. But man, there can't be five other teams in America that play in a more beautiful facility than Creighton does.
I've never been, but I would certainly like to. I mean,
well, they host a lot of NCAA tournaments, and we had this discussion while we were up there. It's like, now that Arkansas has got Calipari, because it seems like the tournament goes through Omaha about every maybe few years as a first round site. Like, maybe if they ever get to the point that they're one of these top three or four seeds and they're trying to protect them and keep them closer to home, maybe they end up in Omaha.
Maybe, but you know what? We're a good host or a good site for them would be this year if they do get one of those protected seeds. St. Louis, baby.
St. Louis, okay.
St. Louis. I would not complain if that's if that's where they ended up going. Play at the Enterprise Center, and yeah.
Sometimes they have first round site in Tulsa too. That would be
nice, but, well, I mean, but that it's would not be home a, for me, right?
Well, but that's home. That's home for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, I know, but
yeah, there are a lot of Razorback fans over in Tulsa.
Does nobody think about me in these instances?
No, I know. No, not a one. All right. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more Razorback baseball, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. We have analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. We're talking about the basketball schedule. You know, also, there's this talk about playing Memphis in an exhibition game over there as part of something with St. Jude. I don't know if that's going to materialize, but certainly we've heard that that's a possibility. So
would be fun.
Incredible. You know, I mean, Calipari gets it. Mm-hmm. Calipari is a showman. Oh, and yeah. I mean, and he knows how to create the environments for which to, you know,
put on the show.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
No, for sure. Yeah. But it's fun. I hope the Memphis thing happens because I personally love going to Memphis.
It'll be there will be something big. Like if Memphis falls through, he will figure out how to do something big in the preseason.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Like, I mean, the Kansas exhibition last year was a ton of fun, and obviously
they went to TCU.
Yeah,
Dickey's Arena.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, both those games were for charity, which is awesome. So I'd imagine they're
not playing Eastern Central Oklahoma State anymore for exhibition games.
Yeah,
no, I don't think that's happening.
Probably not. I mean,
because what do you get out of that? Really, what do you get out of that?
I know in the past he's played exhibitions against Clarion, which was his alma mater, where he played Division II basketball. So, I mean, every once in a while maybe they do that. But, no, more often than not, I think they're going to be getting the big guys.
All right. Let's pivot to talking about baseball here. Vahiva Aloy is going to be back in Omaha tomorrow, by the way. They're going to give out the Golden Spikes Award. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the three finalists, along with the pitcher Liam Doyle, Tennessee. I started to draw a blank, and then Alex Lodis, the shortstop at Florida State, who won the Dick Houser Trophy already. This will be the second time that Lodis will be flown into Omaha. He was flown up there for the Dick Houser presentation, I think, on the first day of the College World Series, and then he'll be flown back for this ceremony. This weekend, Vahiva obviously will be there. I want to mention something about Vahiva. There was a social media post that made its rounds on my days are getting mixed up here. They played LSU on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So late Wednesday night, a picture of Dave Van Horn, Gabe Gackle, and Ryder Helfrich at the podium. They're in the interview room with an empty seat with Vahiva's name in front of it. So here's what happened is that just to kind of get people a little bit behind the scenes of what happens at the College World Series, there is an NCAA rep who comes, and they I believe that it's the NCAA who chooses the participants in – you see this at basketball too. Mm-hmm. They choose the participants who are going to be in the press conference. They come in. Coach will give an opening statement. You ask the players questions. They get up and leave, and then it's just a coach press conference the rest of the way. And there is a – these are timed. I don't know exactly what the time is, but – I mean, the person who is moderating is sitting up there at the table too, and he's looking at his phone with a timer, and you know, once it gets down to a minute, okay, we're going to take the last question here from, you know, front center left seat or something. Mm-hmm. So what happened with Vahiva the other day? Game ends. Of course, the players kind of linger around the field. Tough loss, just a total, you know, gut-wrenching loss for mm-hmm. them. Players kind of linger around the field. You know, it takes a while for the NCAA rep to find him. Mm-hmm. And by the time they bring – and remember, this is all late at night. And so everybody's on deadline. There's a little bit of a hurriedness to it. And so by the time they bring him to the interview room, the press conference has already started. The NCAA decided – or the people who are in charge of the press conference room, they decided we're going to go ahead and get this going. And so instead of bringing him up on stage and having him walk behind, you know, players who are already speaking, they make the decision to put him in a holding area, which is right outside the interview room. This holding area is an area that's got a screen around it and some like a couple of couches, some chairs in there. And say, like, when Arkansas is doing their press conference, that might be where LSU's coaches and players are waiting until it's their time to come in there. So he's sitting in the holding area. And then the decision was made, we're not going to do a one-on-one interview with Vahiva Aloy. Go ahead and go get on the bus. So that's what happened with Vahiva. I think I may have even said something yesterday to the extent of he didn't show up for the press conference. That wasn't necessarily true. What happened was he did not show up on time for the press conference due to all of these other, you know, circumstances that were happening there in Omaha. And then I just, you know, I explained the rest of it to you. But hopefully that clears that up. I did feel bad for him that there was this narrative out there that he skipped the post-game press conference. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I was glad to learn about this because I do feel like it's important in – and I've always felt like it was important for this, but I feel like this now more so – These are professional sports. Mm-hmm. College sports are pro sports. And if you're going to teach your athletes how to prepare for pro sports, one of the things you have to do is you have to let them face the music after a game. So you know, I was happy that he did show up, and it wasn't just a situation of he just felt like he didn't want to answer the questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's obviously, like you mentioned, it's anytime you lose and your season's over, it's going to be a tough loss. I've experienced everybody who's been an athlete has experienced that. So I don't think anybody wants to talk in that situation, and I understand that you don't want to, but it is part of it, and I'm happy that it's been cleared up for sure.
It's a weird deal because they're in this transition period from being, you know, it's weird to think about, but you know they're in some cases they're a year removed from living with mom and dad and going to the prom, mm-hmm. and so they're in this transition period of where they're growing up, and I don't know, it's hard sometimes being in that locker room because you can tell that, you know, there's still an emotional maturity that's happening, and I'm not talking about with Vahiva, I'm just talking about just the players in general who are that age, and so, I wanted to mention that because I hope that I didn't add to the narrative that he skipped out with whatever I said yesterday, and I got a little bit more clarification on that as I was driving home from Omaha yesterday. You know, when I think about this season, I think LSU's the best baseball team in America, and Coastal Carolina may be. Coastal Carolina just has not challenged itself the way that LSU has. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference between playing SEC teams every week and playing in the Sun Belt, where Southern Miss is a really good team and Troy is a really good team. But who else is there? Mm-hmm. And so we'll see over the next few days. But I just think Arkansas ran into the best team in America. I think Arkansas may be the second or third best team in America. But, you know, it's they're not the best team this year. Mm-hmm. LSU was a better team than Arkansas.
Yeah, I think you also touched on it too. I mean, Arkansas had five games against LSU and went 1-4. Yep. So I don't think there's any questioning that, at least in that head-to-head, I mean – LSU had the juice, I guess, if you will. But they had the
big moments late in those games. Mm-hmm. Like they were the better closer, the better finisher. If Arkansas can close that game, that series opener against them in Baton Rouge after 1 o'clock in the morning, then they win that series. If Arkansas can close that game the other night when they should have, I mean, like they should have beaten LSU on Wednesday night. Then they would have played yesterday, and who knows what may happen. Mm-hmm. But LSU, there's something about LSU across multiple sports. It's not just baseball. It's football, too. There's this belief within the LSU programs, and it's maybe you can use the word culture. I don't know. And it's not just under one coaching staff because, you know, it was this way under Skip Bertman and it was this way under Paul Maneri and it was this way under Jay Johnson. Or you think about football, it was this way under Nick Saban and Les Miles and Ed Ogeron and even Brian Kelly over the last few years, that in so many cases when they get into a late game situation, you really, if you're the team that's playing them, you fear, it's like, God, this is LSU. Mm-hmm. I know what LSU does in the fourth quarter. I know what LSU does in the ninth inning. Mm-hmm. There is a culture within that program that finishes games at a really high level.
Yeah.
And that's why I say this all the time, like in football, there's a fine line between being 4-8 and 8-4, or, you know, maybe in LSU's case, between being 8-4 and 11-1. And it's how you finish games. It's how you close close games. And they do that at a really high level in football and in baseball.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. It keeps you on the edge of your seat, you know, leave it late like that. And I think the women's basketball team qualifies for that as well. But, you know, it's interesting. It's fun. It's a fun series coming up. I think it'll be, obviously, you know, Coastal Carolina hasn't lost in what feels like 700 years. So,
April 22nd was the last time.
It's been a minute, hasn't it? So, you know, it should be a very fun series. I'm intrigued to see how it goes. I know you said that you think it's going to come down to a lot of the starting pitching,
yeah.
which you know, hard to argue with that. But no, it'll be fun.
I don't think a lot of Arkansas people care to watch LSU and Coastal because there's going to be so much, you know, what if Arkansas was there in that game. So I don't know that a lot of TV sets are going to be turned on here from the natural state. Looking forward for Arkansas, in the, you know, kind of immediate, you've got a roster to build for next year, and this is going to be really interesting to see how this goes, because next year is when the House settlement, you know, the fallout from that, all of the rules that were built into that settlement, they go into place, I believe, on July 1st. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of uncertainty right now about, in college baseball, the rule is that you can have a 35-man roster. The past few years, it's been a 40-man roster. Before that, was a 35-man roster. The 40-man came after COVID, and I think probably to help with just finding places for some of these players to play who had all this extra eligibility. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to be a 34-man roster. And is that 34-man at the beginning of January, or is that 34-man in August? Because that's a big deal. Mm. You know, what happens if you're in August and or October and you're going through fall ball and you got a couple, three pitchers that all of a sudden they got to have Tommy John surgery? Well, now that really affects you. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that I think a lot of coaches are having to deal with right now, because in the old days, you could carry more than the 34, and maybe you can now. I'm not 100% up on how all this is going to work out, but you could carry more than the 34, and you may just go have to go or the 35 or the 40, and maybe you had some redshirting players in there, and now they're not redshirting anymore. And so, you know, it's a different deal where if you're carrying 34 on your fall roster versus the old days when you were carrying 46, 48, 51 on your fall roster. And so this is interesting. Got some draft decisions that have to be made. You know, like Charles Davalon, for instance, I think he's going to be coveted by professional teams this year. And I tend to think that they'll probably draft him high enough that he won't be back. But I don't know. He's got an extra year of leverage. He's a draft-eligible sophomore. You know, there's a lot of pitchers who I think they're going to lose off of this year's staff. Obviously, Zach Root's going to be gone. Gage Wood's going to be gone. I would suspect Landon Beidelsees. A number of these guys that pitched in the bullpen who were juniors this year, I would think that they're gone. They're going to have back, or they should have back, barring something unforeseen, a number of position players who had, you know, big roles this year. Like, for instance, Ryder Helfrich was a sophomore. You know, he should be back. Cam Kozel, I would think that he would be back. Nolan Souza will be rehabbed from his shoulder surgery probably end of October. You know, Gabe Frazier, you know, he played quite a bit. Cahill Aloy. So, you know, like I said, there's going to be some players who have a decision whether to make. Like, how about Brent Iredell? He's got a decision to make. Does he go pro this year, or does he try to come back for another year? And if he comes back for another year, is he the best third baseman that's on the roster? Because they're going out and they're going through the transfer portal right now, and they're going to bring in quality players when they have a chance to. I talked to Nate Thompson up in Omaha, and we talked about what this year is going to be like in terms of transfer portal. And he said a lot of years you're looking for quantity because you might be losing a lot of players. He said that this year it's maybe a little bit more quality over quantity that they're looking for in the transfer portal, and part of that being the fact that they've got six fewer roster spots potentially in the fall to fill. So it's a weird offseason for baseball, and then you throw on top of that, they went to Omaha like they wanted to do. They got deep into Omaha like they wanted to do, but on the flip side, it makes your off season about 3.5 weeks shorter now than mm-hmm. it's been in previous years.
Yeah, and that to that point, I've always kind of been on the side that the portal window should be open when the season officially ends. Just in every sport, I think that's just kind of how I think things should be done. Which I know there's some cases in which it's kind of tough because football season's a little weird because it kind of runs into January and then you have a weird transfer deadlines and stuff like that. So I know it's a little bit weird, but I've always kind of been in the opinion that, like, you know, you're almost being punished for having a great season, which is kind of baffling to think about. But, and I know that I know just talking, it makes things sound a lot easier, but I know it's very difficult. But yeah, it is an interesting offseason for all the reasons you mentioned. And I think that, you know, the quality or quantity or, you know, whatever is going to be interesting to see. I think, you know, there's all the decisions that need to be made and everything along those lines. But Yeah. Push the portal up back.
Like, well, and push the draft up. The date of the draft is something that really affects how these rosters are constructed too. Mm-hmm. You know, in the old days you'd have the draft on Monday of the regional. I remember 1 year Ole Miss, they had a player who got drafted in the middle of a regional game, and the cameras were on him, and they were like actually showing him get informed, hey, you were just drafted what overall by this team. Now they've moved the draft back like a month from where it used to be, maybe even 5 weeks, to correlate or to coincide with the All-Star game, and nobody cares. That like people, number one, the All-Star weekend or the All-Star week, it's not anywhere near what it used to be. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about the Home Run Derby anymore like they used to. I don't think many people care about the All-Star game anymore like they used to. And certainly nobody's going to be upset if they show up in Atlanta this year and they go to the All-Star game and, oh, man, you know, I'm going to miss the Major League Baseball draft. Which, by the way, the MLB draft, the first night is the only night that they televise. The last 2 days of the MLB draft, it's literally a conference call with all of these different teams. And it's like, you know, Atlanta Braves are on the clock. And then, you know, there'll be this little pause, and then some guy will get on call. The Atlanta Braves select draft prospect 046249, and they'll say his name, you know, Vahiva Aloy, a shortstop from Arkansas. And then the guy who's on the other side, he'll, the Atlanta Braves select Vahiva Aloy, shortstop, Arkansas. Colorado Rockies are on the clock. You know, and it's like, It's this for like 5 hours. It's one of the most boring things you can cover, by the way. It's hard not to fall asleep when it's hot outside. But like they're not going to miss that if it's not part of the All-Star game.
Yeah. No, that doesn't sound very fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, nobody's going to the Home Run Derby listening to a 5-hour conference call between the 30 franchises before they get there.
You're not?
No. I mean, I am, but I'm covering it, so it's a little bit different. Move the draft ahead. Fix the portal window. You can fix a lot of this madness that I feel like happens during the offseason. And that goes, you know, the draft is a little bit unique to major league or to baseball, college baseball, but the portal window, that applies, I think, to all sports.
Yeah. No, and like I keep saying, I know it's more difficult than it sounds, just like, hey, push it back. So these teams are not having to deal with portal recruiting and the College World Series or NCAA tournament or whatever it may be at the same time. I know that's it's more difficult than just saying it, but like it's something has to be done, because I mean, Coastal Carolina and LSU are playing for a national championship while all their conference rivals are now able to just solely focus on recruiting and catching them. So it not that it's unfair, because obviously people are going to want to play for those teams, but like it is a disadvantage in the recruiting world, I guess.
A couple more thoughts real quick on this year's Razorback baseball team. I hope people appreciate, and I think most people do, I hope they appreciate how good this team was and the fact that they ran into a really good LSU team in the semifinals, and that's why they're not playing for a national championship. LSU, like I said, they're just better this year, but this was a good team. I would take this team over the 2018 that was national runner-up and, you know, was the fly ball away, the pop-up away from winning the championship. I think this year's team was probably more complete. I think the 18 team, they had a better number one pitcher in Blaine Knight. But you know, put Blaine Knight up against Gage Wood and what he did the other day, who knows? Yeah. But I think that, you know, position-wise, I thought this team was the most complete team that they've had here. And, you know, Arkansas, they're knocking on the door. They're banging on that door every year. And at some point, they're going to win a title, I feel like. I know people will say, oh, Arkansas's cursed or snake bit or this or that. I just feel like when you are constantly pushing yourself to, you know, to and you are in the discussion, and obviously the results on the field are that you're one of the best teams in the country, eventually you're going to catch a break and you're going to win it. Mm-hmm. And it may not be with your best team. That's the thing. So many times, championship teams
are not the best.
They're not the best teams of that era. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there are a number of Super Bowl teams where if you talk to people in those franchises, they would say, you know, we won, like Dallas Cowboys, for instance, they won the Super Bowl in 1995, Super Bowl 30 over the Steelers. That team was not as good as the team before, the year before, that had lost to the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. This is how it works, though. You know, I mean, in baseball, there's a lot of momentum. There's a lot of breaks, if you will, that go into, you know, who win these games. I just feel like this was a good team, and I hope people understand how and appreciate how good they were. I hate this championship culture that exists. That
ring culture is the worst.
Ring culture. There you go. You know that if you don't win the season, there are like 350 something teams that did not get to that point in the season that Arkansas and Louisville got to on Wednesday. Don't tell me they had a bad year because they didn't win a champion. They just didn't win the last game of the year. And if that is your expectation, you are going to be disappointed. I don't know how many, you know, percent, like over 99% of the time, you're going to be disappointed. Think about all the great teams that Nolan Richardson had. How many times did he win the last game of the year?
Just the once.
Just the one. Jim Boeheim, just the one. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's basketball. Football, there's a lot of great coaches who they had one national championship or they never won one. Mm-hmm. You know, so I get tired of this talk that Arkansas didn't win and so the season wasn't successful. I don't agree with it. I think that you take the full body of work and you appreciate it for what it was, and you look at the end and you say, look, you played a better team. If they had lost to, say, like Murray State a couple of times, maybe I'm a little bit more on board with people being upset with what happened in Omaha, but they lost to a really good team in LSU. And I've been saying it for weeks. I think LSU was right there with Arkansas as the two most complete teams in the country.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, like you said, I mean, sometimes, I mean, the best team in the country doesn't win. And I know we've kind of rehashed it that, you know, our LSU was just a better team this season. But, like, I think back to the 8-seed Villanova that won the men's basketball championship in whatever year that was.
1985.
I was going to say it was definitely before my time. But, or, like, there's countless examples. But, you know, it's just, I mean, it's kind of, what makes kind of postseason sports a little fun. Like, anybody can win. Anybody can beat anybody. I mean, look at Murray State.
And I think all that
hurt.
Who thought
Murray State was going to make it this far?
I'll say this, too. I think all that hurt eventually makes it feel...
Makes it sweeter.
It makes it sweeter when you win.
Trust me, I'm a St. Louis Blues fan. Trust me, I know. Oh, man, the 52 years of hurt that ended on June 12th, 2019. Oh, it was incredible.
Mm.
Well, so, hey, maybe they get their St. Louis Blues moment.
Maybe. It'd be more like they feel like a little bit more like the Cubs and the Red Sox before they finally won their World Series.
We don't need to talk about those teams because the Red Sox beat the Cardinals and the Cubs are the Cubs. So
yeah. Well, there you go. I just hope people appreciate how good this season was because it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun and it was a really good team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, sure. It was a team that I think could have won a championship in other years. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's the thing, is that sometimes there are years where you have, you know, like, I don't know that they would have beaten Tennessee last year. Tennessee was a really great team last year. LSU was really good in 23. Do I think they could have beaten Ole Miss in 22? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mississippi State in 21? Yeah, I do. So it's just weird that some years your champions are really strong, and some years they're not. And I think LSU this year, they just have gotten stronger over the last 7 or 8 weeks to the point that I don't know that anybody wanted to be playing them. And the fact that Little Rock took them to the mat, that was...
And we're leading late.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Just think
Go
about
Trojans.
How, think about how this could have... Think about how everything could have changed this year had Little Rock been able to finish that off. And maybe you're talking about West Virginia or Little Rock in the College World Series and...
Little Rock making the College World Series would have been incredible.
Yeah,
the last team in the OVC tournament making it into Omaha.
How about this? If Little Rock would have won the regional and won the Super, they would have played Arkansas first.
That would have been fun.
World Series. Boy, that would have made a lot of headlines.
It would have been very fun, but unfortunately, it was not to be. But
hopefully, I'll say the one thing. I hope they take a look at reseeding the teams in the tournament moving forward. Jay Antiguas, who's the selection committee chairman, he's also the AD at Southeastern Louisiana. He said right before the World Series began that he thought that it was something that they should take a look at. I don't know that it would have changed the outcome any. I mean, look, LSU or Arkansas, had they been put on separate sides of the bracket, they still would have had Coastal to deal with.
But a Coastal team that hasn't lost in 743 games.
But I do think you look at the two brackets in Omaha this year, and you say, you look at what Coastal had to go through, and you look at what LSU had to go through, and it was not, they were not equal.
Yeah, no, for sure. But, yeah, I mean, it's always just going to be, you know, what if, but, no, it's fun. I don't know. But the reseeding, I do think, is something that probably should, if nothing else, be looked at, because I do think that, you know, should Arkansas and LSU, arguably the two best teams in the field, be playing against each other on opening night, or I guess the second night, if I'm not mistaken.
Opening round.
Should that be happening? You know, I don't know. But then you maybe open discussions of like, okay, do you reseed for baseball? Do you also do it for softball?
Yes.
And if you do it for that, yes.
No, come on, keep naming like sports. Football, basketball. Yes. Basketball, yes. just do it. I mean, like create better matchups. Mm-hmm. Or put it this way, create better matchups potentially at the end of your tournament. Mm-hmm. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah.
You know, where you don't have help me out. Was it San Diego State playing FAU in the Final Four?
Yeah. Hey, those are two good teams, though. Yeah. That Florida Atlantic team.
But you did feel watching that game.
Oh, I thought it was electric.
But you felt like watching that game, whoever lost that game was going to lose to the winner on the other side.
Maybe. I felt like if Florida Atlantic ended up winning.
Okay, most people felt that way.
I was like, maybe this really is the team of destiny. But, because all right, now I'm getting off on a tangent. If Florida Atlantic won the national championship that year,
cut his mic.
Conference USA, don't do it. Conference USA would have won the national championship, the CBI, and the NIT.
How about that?
Now none of those teams are in Conference USA anymore.
Yeah, nobody in a Razorback audience cares about this. All right. Hey, we appreciate everybody being with us for all these shows here over the last several months. Again, we're going to be back in August some point, and we will have some shows before then, but on a more routine basis in August once football season starts. Hopefully we'll be a little bit more tan and a little bit more rested by the time that comes around. We appreciate everyone being with us. Hope that we see you throughout the summer at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.